Last Word on Today FM.
So the news I think the whole country has been waiting for, what would be the outcome in the case taken by Nikita Hand against the mixed martial artist fighter Conor McGregor. She has won her case. The High Court jury, which heard all of the evidence, returned its verdict this afternoon and decided that Conor McGregor was guilty. She had also taken an action against his friend James Lawrence, and the jury decided that Lawrence did not assault her. There's also been an award of damages made, just short of €250,000, €248,603.60 to be exact. That's to include general and specific damages, which include medical expenses, and the issue of costs is to be dealt with next week. There was a jury of 8 women and 4 men in this civil case against Conor McGregor, which began its deliberation yesterday after 8 days of evidence and 3 days of closing speeches and judges' charges. And remember that Conor McGregor faced an accusation in the civil action that he brutally raped and battered Nikita Hand at a hotel in South Dublin in December 2018. He told the court that he had consensual sex with Miss Hand in the penthouse suite at that hotel. So we have 2 guests that will be joining us. Frank Graney will be joining us in just a moment, who is in court. But first, Cliona Sadlier from the Rape Crisis Network as Executive Director. What's your reaction to this verdict from the courts?
Well, I think like almost everyone, and especially the women of Ireland, that it's a sigh of relief, really, and in the first instance. And I think what we're experiencing is we were holding our breath waiting for this verdict, because we didn't quite know, you know, in terms of the types of rape myths that we've been tackling, the types of messages that we've been sending out around consent, and the types of messages we've been sending out around how women have a right to you know, bodily autonomy, to go out to enjoy themselves, and to not be blamed for what somebody else chooses to do for them. So I think Nikita Hand has, in taking this really courageous action of taking a civil case, she really put that to the test. You know, she put us all to the test on that. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, and especially those of us working in this area, we're you know, today going, you know what, this is a really strong signal about how far we've come in terms of how we understand women's right to bodily autonomy, and how we are not going to stand for blaming victims.
Cliona, stay with us, please. I want to bring in our Today FM Courts correspondent, Frank Graney. Tell us, please, about how this verdict was delivered.
Oh, truly remarkable scenes in Court 24 in the High Court, where this has been taking place for the last couple of weeks. The jurors began the deliberations at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, but they didn't spend very long doing so before they were sent home for the evening. They continued their deliberations first thing this morning. And as the day wore on, you kind of got the sense that it was probably going to go into next week, because the jurors came back and said that they wanted to go home at 6 o'clock this evening. But lo and behold, a short time ago, they did come back with a verdict. They, as we all know at this stage now, ruled against Conor McGregor. They ruled in her favour in relation to the case that she made against Conor McGregor, but not the one that she made against the second named defendant, Conor McGregor's friend, James Lawrence, who she also claimed had raped her in the Beacon Hotel 6 years ago. Now, as you can imagine, it's quite a small courtroom. It's been packed every day. There are even more people in there today. The judge had to ask some of the people to go upstairs to the public gallery just before the jury came back. He said that he wanted calm when the verdict was eventually delivered. Conor McGregor, I noticed, was out of breath as he dashed into the courtroom. He was there with quite an entourage today. His father, Tony, was there, as he has been day in, day out. But he was also joined today by his mother and his fiancée, Dee Devlin, who was seated beside him. A sister of his was also there in court today when that verdict was delivered. I noticed just before the jurors came back, he took 2 very loud, very audible intakes of breath. He was looking to the heavens. He looked, I must say, and my colleagues on the press bench agreed, he looked rattled today, more so than he has at any other occasion during this 2-week trial. He was very, very nervous. Nikita Hand was seated on a bench directly in front of him and his entourage. She was joined by her boyfriend, who held her hand tightly as he has done throughout this entire ordeal. Her mother was also there in support of her, and she was very distressed. Before Nikita Hand gave her evidence at the early stages of this trial, I noticed her struggling to find her breath as she made her way to the witness box. While she was in the witness box and she spent 3 or 4 days giving her evidence and being cross-examined by the various defence barristers in this case, at times she became very upset as she relived what happened to her in the penthouse suite of the Beacon Hotel back in December of 2018. On a number of occasions she had to request comfort breaks, particularly when she was being shown CCTV footage of her comings and goings from the hotel room afterwards. A very, very distressing set of circumstances for Ms. Hand, which makes it all the more impressive that she made this allegation, that she saw this case through. Because let's not forget, and we spoke about this on your show earlier in the trial, that the DPP decided not to bring criminal charges against Mr. McGregor or Mr. Lawrence. This wasn't a criminal case. This was a civil legal action. And it wasn't about money. She was awarded today in compensation just under €250,000. But it wasn't about money. And her barrister said that to the jurors from the outset. This was about vindication. And Nikita Hand went into this with her eyes wide open. She knew that she wasn't going to get the same protection that she would have got if she was a complainant in a criminal case. And what I'm talking about there is identity. Her identity, her name, her image has been revealed throughout all of this. It has been an awful ordeal for her. And I had a moment before I left the courtroom where I went over to her. She was being comforted and by her family and her friends. And she was also having a brief consultation with her lawyers. And I actually approached her just to say, to offer her my congratulations and to say that she was a very, very brave woman for what she has done. Because, you know, your show has gifted me all of this time during the trial an endless amount of articles have been written in the newspapers. But what you cannot get across in my reportage or my colleagues' reportage is being in the courtroom and seeing the distress that she was under when she was giving her evidence. It took an enormous amount of strength for her to do so. She came out just a short time ago, Matt, and she made a brief statement to the gathered media. And she spoke about how she did this for her young daughter, for other women who may be victims of sexual violence that feel like they won't be listened to, that they won't be believed. She's a very brave lady, and she deserves her vindication today because that's what she set out looking for.
Absolutely. Stay with us, please, Frank. I want to play a little bit of the audio of what Nikita Hand said outside the court.
I want to thank my partner, Gary, who has been so supportive for the last 4 years and has held my hand throughout this trial every day and every other day. I want to thank my mum and all my family and friends. Lastly, I want to thank my daughter, Freya, who I'm most grateful for. She has given me so much strength and courage over the last 6 years throughout this nightmare to keep on pushing forward for justice. I want to show Freya and every other girl and boy that you can stand up for yourself if something happens to you, no matter who the person is, and justice will be served. To all the victims of sexual assault, I hope my story is a reminder that no matter how afraid you might be, speak up, you have a voice, and keep on fighting for justice. I know this has impacted not only my life, my daughters, my family and friends tremendously, and it's something that I'll never forget for the rest of my life. But now that justice has been served, I can now try and move on and look forward to the future with my family and friends and daughter.
And we wish her absolutely the best, because this has been so traumatic, having to go through not just the initial assault that she suffered, but the consequences over 6 years and then the trial. And that's what I want to come to you about, Cliona Sadlier, because unfortunately, terribly, we have far too many women in this country who have been the victims of rape and of sexual assault and assault, and who do not always get justice, and who often do not go through the criminal justice system, even though they're given anonymity in cases like that, for all sorts of reasons, for fear of reprisals against the people against whom they make the allegations, for all sorts of issues. Yeah. And yet then we have this, the bravery that was required on Nikita Hand's part to allow ourselves to be identified by nature of taking a civil case and to face what has, in addition to what has been going on, the trauma of being in the courts, significant online abuse as well, which I'm sure she must be aware of.
Yeah. No, she, as Frank said earlier, she went in here with her eyes open and just this incredible determination. And that had to be sustained for those years because she had to stay with this. She knew she was stepping into, she knew who she was accusing. She knew that how public this would be and what this would look like in the civil place where, case where she wouldn't have that protection of anonymity that she'd have in a criminal case, as we've said, and she continued to choose to do this because she was determined to hold him accountable. And I just, you know, we all just are in awe, I think, of just that clarity and that determination, even as it impacted on her, as she has described, and as she's recognised that this will continue to impact on her. She's made those choices and she stood up for all of us in this. I think also just to really reiterate what the choice she was making here, if she hadn't succeeded here, she would have been facing costs as well on this. So she was also taking a huge financial risk for herself now and her family into the future, as well as the reputation, and as you say, the online discourse that she was part of, and a lot of that really not in her favour, and a lot of that unkind, but of course a huge amount of that really supportive. And I think she's absolutely right. She's really said something really powerful to all of the women out there, indeed to the men out there as well, in terms of, if you are a survivor, you know, don't be afraid, and you can speak up and you can tell someone and you will be believed.
And Cliona, we had some people getting in touch with us during our coverage of this case saying that the detail was too graphic and that we shouldn't be broadcasting it. But my view was that this is the reality of assault. This is the reality of what happens to women, and that we can't wish it away or try not to hear it. That it is important, and although it must have been very distressing for anyone who has been through this, but that this needs to be hammered home perhaps at times to men who are aggressors, that this type of behaviour is reprehensible, and to treat any woman in this fashion.
I think we're always balancing this, and I think we always have to ask ourselves this question. It's not a straightforward answer to that, you know, should we or shouldn't we? I think we have to think first and foremost about the survivor who's in the middle of that, who is the subject of that particular event and that particular story. It's their life, and it's something that happened to them, it was done to them. So that's our first consideration. But we have to, you know, we're breaking silences all the time. All too often, we turn aside from the reality and just how brutal it is. And if we turn aside, then we're creating space for the perpetrator. So we do sometimes have to look at this, you know, dead in the eye and really face up to it. And really, alongside the likes of Nikita Hand, we have to walk side by side with them. And that can be really challenging, but we do occasionally have to do it.
Frank, if I can go back to you, please. Can you just explain the verdict in a little bit more detail as well? Because we've been talking about rape and we've been talking about sexual assault, but the verdict is in relation to the word assault. Can you explain that for me, please?
Well, again, as we've been pains to point out throughout the entire trial, this wasn't a criminal matter. It wasn't for the jury to decide on any criminal wrongdoing, guilty or otherwise. This was a civil legal action. She was essentially suing for damages arising from that incident in the Beacon Hotel. But what the very specific question that the jury was asked in relation to both Conor McGregor and James Lawrence was whether or not they had assaulted her. Again, as I say, she didn't win her case against James Lawrence, but in relation to Mr. McGregor, the jurors were satisfied that he had assaulted her. They then went on to assess damages. And just in terms of, I suppose, clearly we don't know what went on in the jury room, how they arrived at their decision. But whenever any sort of shred of doubt was introduced into the case as to whether or not she would be successful, I kept casting my mind back to the photographs of the injuries that she suffered at the hands of Conor McGregor. And we can now say that because seeing is believing. And those photographs were shown in court. Nikita Hand was black and blue from head to toe. There were two paramedics who gave evidence during the trial. one of whom, a very experienced paramedic called Ethna Scully, said that she'd never seen bruising as intense as the bruising that she found on Nikita Han as she brought her to the return to hospital. And also something that you mentioned a moment ago, Matt, in terms, I suppose, in relation to the graphic nature of some of the details that were heard in court. The reality is that the reportage that I shared on your show and elsewhere was the tip of the iceberg when it comes to what was heard in court, when it comes to what the jury ended up deliberating on. As I say, those photographs told a story in of themselves. The video footage, there was lots made of the CCTV footage of Nikita Hand in the lift and in the underground car park of the Beacon Hotel in the aftermath of that attack. But there was also some CCTV footage shown of her in the back of an ambulance as she was being brought to the sexual assault treatment unit at the Rotunda Hospital. She was in a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort. She was clearly distressed. But at the end of the day, I suppose what the jurors had to consider, and this is a tort essentially of assault or battery, and that's what they had to consider. As I say, the jury already heard evidence in relation to the DPP's decision not to bring criminal charges against either man. The DPP felt that there was insufficient evidence and that there wasn't a reasonable prospect of getting a criminal conviction.
Sorry, Frank, that's important because we are getting lots of questions in about why did the DPP not bring a criminal case when a jury hearing all of this evidence in a civil case decided that Conor McGregor was guilty.
Well, they're entirely separate arenas. For starters, obviously, the standard of proof is much higher in the criminal courts beyond a reasonable doubt, whereas the balance of probabilities is the test before the civil court. So obviously, if this case had gone to the Central Criminal Court and if rape charges had been brought, a jury there would have had a much higher standard of proof, and the DPP simply felt that they weren't going to get a conviction across the line. Nikita Hand was clearly very disappointed, shocked, and expressed that shock to the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution. She wasn't happy with the answers that she received in relation to why a criminal prosecution wasn't pursued. And with the assistance of the Rape Crisis Centre, she sent a further letter seeking more clarity because she didn't get an awful lot of detail in relation to their reasoning not to go forward. And she actually suspected that one of the reasons, and the DPP refuted it, but she suspected that one of the reasons was because of the high profile of the person that she was making the allegation against, clearly Conor McGregor. Now, she was assured that that wasn't the case, that his identity wouldn't have influenced their decision. But she did get some specifics in relation to why they decided not to prosecute. A big problem for them was the statement and the claim made by James Lawrence that he went on to have consensual sex with her in the hotel after she had claimed to be raped. The CCTV footage of her again afterwards, seemingly with certainly this is something that the defence put forward, a proposition that there was seemingly nothing wrong with her, that she was happy and that she was seen to hug Conor McGregor, give him a peck on the back of the arm, that she was seen kissing James Lawrence in the hours after she claimed that she had been attacked. But you know what, Matt, and I'm sure lots of your listeners will agree, and certainly in my experience covering difficult cases like this down through the years, you very, very rarely find a survivor of sexual violence running down the streets, arms flailing in the air, crying rape. That's for the movies. That's Hollywood. That's not what happens in reality. People in traumatic, people who experience trauma, certainly in the immediate aftermath, behave in very different ways. Her behaviour was described as bizarre. Her side put forward the case that it was delayed shock, and I have to agree that she was suffering and she was found to be suffering from severe PTSD, and that is something that she still suffers with to this day.
And Cliona Sadlier, I think that's an important point, and I'm getting some very personal messages coming in from listeners about their own experiences of rape and sexual assault, because it's something that lives with them for many, many years afterwards.
Absolutely, and how someone reacts after and immediately after, or even in the medium and long term, is entirely, you know, that everyone is different in how they do it, and it all depends on context and where they're at. What Nikita Han told us was that she was in fear of her life. She had been, you know, she'd been pressed on her neck three times, and feared for her life. So we're now, you know, she was in a situation. And then this assault was you know, being conducted on her while she was in fear of her life. So, you know, in terms of how she was going to process that and what she was going to do to survive and where she was going to make her decisions. I don't think anyone can put themselves in her shoes until they're there, because it's really, as you say, you're caught in that moment. You're in shock. She has PTSD, and she's in fear, and she is simply trying to survive in impossible circumstances.
I think the fear of simply trying to survive is such an important point.
She cannot predict what's going to happen next. She's simply trying to survive. So when we look at it in hindsight, we have the hindsight of we know what happened next. She did not know what was happening next.
One final thing for now, Frank. And one of this raises an interesting question, which somebody else has said to me earlier today as well. In the event of Nikita Hand winning, can Conor McGregor appeal this, meaning that this could all happen again?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly can and does have an avenue of appeal. Whether he will go down that route and challenge the decision of the jury clearly remains to be seen. I think the really important thing this evening is to put Nikita Hand front and centre of this story. She has been through the mill over the past few years. This isn't just the past few weeks. This has been going on for the last 6 years now. Obviously, she had that bitter disappointment when the DPP didn't pursue a criminal prosecution. And also, Matt, quickly, I think it's worth also noting, just in terms of Nikita Hand and what her life looks like now, this wasn't something that the jury was told because the judge considered it to be irrelevant. But her home was actually broken into over the summer. This was a very distressing episode for her and her family. She was in bed with her partner when some masked men broke a front window of her house, came upstairs. Her boyfriend suffered some stab wounds. Her daughter was asleep in an adjoining room. The Gardaí were called. Now, it's very important to point out that they weren't laying the blame of that attack at Conor McGregor's feet. But the judge was told that it was supporters of Mr. McGregor who carried out that break-in. Nikita Hand was looking for a sum of money for rehousing, and that was one of the reasons that she was looking for that, because she felt like she was intimidated out of her home and out of her hometown. She has been through the wars in relation to all of that, and I think that is just yet another reason, and there are many, that we should all commend her for what she has done. It's been a very difficult experience, and I do really hope that this is the end of it for her now. Obviously, she will live with it, as we've spoken about in this piece. She will live with it probably for the rest of her life, but she's dealing with it very well. We heard from her doctor, we heard from psychiatrists. She's facing her challenges head on. And she has a brilliant network of people. From what I could see in court day in, day out, she has a brilliant network of people around her. She also spoke very highly of the people at the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. And I think the message that she got out today as well on the steps of the courthouse is to survivors of sexual violence out there who may be feeling like they have nowhere to turn, she is proof that there are places to turn and people who will turn a kind ear to you. So that's, I suppose, a really, really important message that she wanted to get out, and it's one worth sharing this evening.
Frank Graney, our Today FM Courts correspondent, and Cliona Sadlier from the Rape Crisis Network, thank you both very much. And thank you to all of the people who have been texting into 0874100102, expressing their support for Nikita Hand, expressing their delight that her bravery has led to her winning this case. And the amount of people who just say they do not underestimate how difficult it is to be a survivor of rape and sexual abuse, and to have to live with the trauma of what has been experienced. Caroline says, so relieved for Nikita Hand that the jury found in her favour, but sad at the loss of her personal privacy, hoping she can now move forward and make a new start. We are going to the Week Trending, very abridged version of the Week Trending, but Adele Coffey had come all the way up to go from Galway to us, but I think understands why we had to spend so much time dealing with that. But can I ask you, as a woman who has been following this case over the last 2 weeks, how do you feel about the outcome?
Yeah, I think I was actually surprised at the outcome, because I think you become so used to these cases, seeing women bringing cases and waiving their anonymity and going through so much in court, and then not getting the verdict that they wanted to. I was surprised that the verdict did come back in her favour. I think it's a landmark ruling, actually. I think we will perhaps see more women bring civil cases, because the the stand.
Well, it takes enormous bravery to actually, in a criminal case, your anonymity is protected until at the end you might choose to decide to let your name be known so that the perpetrator can become known. But to go through the evidence in a civil case in public, not knowing what the outcome might be?
I'm astonished by her courage, her bravery, you know, consider the fact that she has a child, that her life will be impacted by this, even though the jury have found in her favour, her life will continue to be impacted, obviously. I found the case really interesting. Like most people in this country, I think, were tuned into it and hearing about it on a daily basis. I think the thing that really stood out for me was how the reputation of a woman is still really, really judged, and how women respond after a trauma is still really judged. Were you upset in the correct way? Did you behave the correct way? Did you look upset enough? These things extend right across the board, not just in assault cases or rape cases. It's, you know, how women grieve, how women, how they dress, how they look. These things came up, and that was brought into question about the friend's evidence as well, wasn't it? Whether it was a story to throw some doubt on her reputation.
Okay, well, look, I think what we have is an outcome that I think nearly everyone I know was hoping for, but was, as you just expressed, was fearful that would not happen. Mm. That, you know, we hear bits and pieces, we had excellent reports and the like of Frank, but he is summarising what actually is in front of the jury. And in this case, the jury has decided. They were given a question to answer and they answered it. And in the case of Conor McGregor, they decided that he was guilty of the assault. And I think that's what we will all remember, as well as remembering the shocking details of what we have.
I think, yes, what you said earlier was correct as well. I think even though those details are very shocking, it's so, so important. And particularly in this day and age where it seems like people's access to pornography is changing people's sexuality. It's changing how
their sexual behaviours.
I mean, we saw a case completely unrelated, obviously, we should say, that case of that American woman who was killed in Budapest a few weeks ago. That's been defended as a gross and aberrant sex game that went wrong, apparently. You know, we see that defence come up in different cases, that idea of a justification of it was something went wrong, and often maybe that is the case, but often it's not, and you just worry about the trend for that kind of defence. Obviously that's completely separate to what
absolutely
we just heard about.
I'm almost unsure as to how we actually go to anything else talk about anything
Everything feels trivial, doesn't it?
Everything else is almost trivial by comparison with this, because we've been talking about what's been happening in America. We've been talking about our general election. But I think this one has come home to people on the basis that this could happen to anyone that you know. Could be your daughter, your wife, your girlfriend, your mother. And that's, I think, why this is actually... And, you know, that there is a duty on the part of men to behave appropriately towards women.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's important to point out that there are so many good men out there and who support women and would never dream of hurting women.
I think this is actually just one of the... I think you're right, Adele. Hopefully, this is going to be a defining moment, in that there's an awful lot of people out there who have seen Conor McGregor as a form of role model. There have been people who have actually spoken about him as being potentially a president of this country. Now, it's a small minority who have actually suggested that. This is a man who in recent years has taken to social media as well to inflame sentiment against immigrants. And we are seeing what a lot of people have heard stories about and have suspected about the way that he treats people. And we have seen it displayed in court. And now, thankfully, the jury, which has heard all of the evidence, has come to a verdict which exposes the truth about him.
The Last Word on Today FM.